This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Look, if you're at all thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and you're matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/invisiblechoir today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/invisiblechoir. This episode is also sponsored by Wildgrain, the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. I especially love the chocolate chunk cookies, and look, the bread is great for any family gatherings or anytime you're hosting a meal, because every item from Wildgrain bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less. Yeah, there's no thawing required. For a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/choir to start your subscription. You heard me, free croissants in every box, and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/choir. That's wildgrain.com/choir, or you can use promo code choir at checkout.
Reach Freaks. Invisible Choir explores detailed depictions of violence and murder and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And I saw like a flash, a silver flash with like a metallic flash come at me. And in my head, I immediately fucking said, aim, aim. And I was like, aim. And I was like, and I just picked that front sight right in the center mass.
Chance encounters. They happen often. For example, let's say you're having a terrible day at work, but at lunch you head out to a food truck and the stranger in front of you in line strikes up a decent conversation, and before you know it, they've offered to pay for your sandwich and fries. A strange encounter like this can make a difference in perspective in a positive way. However, some chance encounters are not positive at all. When a person is surprised at the wrong time by the wrong person, well, a chance encounter can become deadly. And if guns are involved, a split-second surprise can easily trigger a terrible choice within a matter of seconds. Seconds are all it takes for a person to be vibrant and breathing until they're suddenly shot down, and all that was vital becomes still and cold. And on October 18th, 2015, it took just 13 seconds for tragedy to strike. On Saturday, October 17th, 2015, Corey Jones planned to play a show with his reggae band, Future Presidents, at Johnny Mango's Tiki Bar, located in Jupiter, Florida. The band planned to play from about 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. Corey played the drums, and he owned a pretty expensive drum set. He came from a musical family and had grown up playing music at church. That day, Corey spent time running errands. He then stopped by his brother CJ's house, which was located less than an hour's driving distance from where Corey's show was scheduled later that night. The two brothers were quite close and had lived with each other off and on over the years. In fact, Corey's older brother is the one who taught him to play drums. When Corey pulled his Hyundai up to his brother's house, CJ was already waiting outside. Corey had something exciting to show him.
I'm pretty much a drummer. I taught my brother how to play. I learned from my uncle in the churches and stuff like that. And we just, you learn how to play both sides.
But when it came to everything that he did in the regular life, from eating to writing, everything else, was he right or left-handed?
It was left.
And just prior to his death, did Corey purchase a firearm?
Yes.
How close in time to that Saturday night, Sunday morning, did he pick up that gun, sir?
I don't know quite when he got the
basis. Overruled.
I don't know exactly when he got the gun, but I know when he showed me the gun. It was on that Saturday before he left for the gig.
So that Saturday, October 17th of 2015, you saw that firearm that Corey had bought?
Yes.
And where did you see it at?
I seen it on his passenger side, on the seat. He had it on the seat inside the case.
And was this, did he come over to your house?
Yeah, he came by the house and he parked in the front. I was outside already, and he came around in the front. He's like, bro, I got something. I was like, what you got?
Sustain, don't tell us what he told you, but
just what you saw, sir.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I seen the gun.
And was it still in the box that he had purchased it?
Yes, it was still in the box.
And you saw it on his seat, or did he put it anywhere else?
No, it was on his passenger seat. He didn't even touch it. It was just on the seat.
Now, was he an avid shooter, or is this something that, kind of came out of nowhere?
No, he's not a shooter. Never. We never had a gun.
CJ mentored his younger brother, Corey, throughout the years. Before becoming a personal chef in Florida, CJ played in the NFL as a wide receiver. Corey moved with him when he played for different teams in different cities. The brothers were pretty much inseparable, so much so that after Corey accepted a football scholarship at the University of St. Francis in Fort Wayne, Indiana, he decided to leave school to live with his brother when CJ signed with the Cleveland Browns in 2003. In Ohio, while CJ played football, he also paid for Corey to go to college in Akron so he could learn to read sheet music.
I bought him that set when I was in the NFL. I was playing with Cleveland. That was his thing that he wanted me to get him, and so I bought that.
How much did it cost?
Approximately, back then it was almost like $5,500, and everything else, he wanted the base set of it, and everything else he pretty much worked to get, as far as like his extra accessories.
So he added to it after you bought him that kit?
Yeah, he added to it a lot. He added all the little drum things, and he added to it.
And you had said that was you bought it for him back when you were in the NFL?
So yeah, that was like 2004.
And at one point, were you a professional football player for the NFL?
Yes.
And what, do you play for the Browns and the
Patriots?
Play
for the Browns, Patriots, Seattle Seahawks, Kansas City, and Denver Broncos.
By October 17th of 2015, Corey was 31 years old and had played in numerous bands and was a respected musician throughout Florida. In addition to drumming, he was active in his church and worked for the housing authority in Delray Beach as an inspector, making sure landlords kept their rentals up to code. The tiki bar gig was on Saturday, though, so drumming was his fun job, a way to let loose for the night and earn a little extra cash on the side. That evening, Corey had plans to drive to the show with one of his cousins. However, his cousin called around 5:30 p.m. to cancel because he forgot he had plans to watch a youth league football game. Corey told his cousin that he would see him at church the following day. He also told him that he loved him. And after he'd learned he'd be driving solo, he took a nap at his brother's house, then woke up around 6:30 p.m., and a few hours after that, with the drum set now packed inside of his Hyundai Santa Fe, he headed to Jupiter, Florida, which was about a 45-minute drive away from his brother's house. Typically, Corey wouldn't have been driving alone to and from a gig. The four-member band usually drove together when they played shows. The band owned a van they called Jackie O, which was an 11-seat Mercedes Sprinter van used for touring. Corey liked to sit near the rear by his drum set and listen to music while the group traveled together. The band members usually met at a house in Delray Beach and loaded up before heading to gigs. However, they recently put a lot of mileage on the van on their tour out to the Midwest, so the van was in the shop that Saturday for routine maintenance.
This gig that you guys played that night, how long did it last?
It was 3 hours. It was 10 to 1.
Can you tell for me, tell the members of the jury, when you met up with Corey that night, October 18th, 2015, when you guys first got together,
yeah,
what was Corey's demeanor?
He was just hurrying to set up and so we could kind of chill. I think he was trying to eat food actually that night. So he was just a normal. He's always, when he's like on the drums, he's like really always happy and, you know, just a nice, you know, a nice individual overall. Just, you know, so yes. That's the kind of person that I knew from the short time that I knew him.
Johnny Mango's Tiki Bar and Grill was the sort of place folks go to see local bands or to watch sports on a lazy Saturday afternoon in a beachy, laid-back atmosphere. It housed a number of orange and turquoise booths, a small raised stage, and an oval-shaped bar surrounded by tall chairs that looked as though they were made of bamboo and braided palm leaves. A fake thatched roof bordered the upper part of the bar near the ceiling, where a number of TVs lined the wall. At around 10 p.m., the band began to play. Corey wore camouflage pants, black and white tennis shoes, and a t-shirt, complete with the Future President's logo. Some members of the audience were people Corey and his bandmates had met while on tour in the Midwest. They were from Ohio, and when Future Presidents took a break from playing, Corey chatted them up, as he often did with friends and acquaintances during play breaks. The band also ate sandwiches and fries during the break, and Matthew Giles Huntsberger, who was sitting in for an absent bandmate, shared a joint with Corey during that time as well. About 30 people watched while the group performed 16 songs, 14 of which were originals. At about 1 a.m., the show was slated to end, but they kept playing on a bit longer. One of the songs on the set list was called Nada, which a band member called an ode to, quote, people who have been unnecessarily shot down by their own police. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. All right, so I need to get something off my chest. I'm not the greatest at managing stress. Never have been, and it's still something I struggle with to this day. The reality for me is I've had all sorts of weird manifestations of that bottled up stress impacting me negatively. In graduate school, I lost a patch or two of hair here and there, and I have a now decades-long issue with grinding my teeth at night. But you know, one thing that's helped me is therapy. Therapy has been a great safe space to get things off my chest and help me figure out how to work through whatever's bottling up inside, whatever stressors I have sort of building up in my life. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, consider giving BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and I think the best part is it's suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. So if for any reason you're not getting along or vibing with your therapist, you can change, which isn't an option that's easily available everywhere. I know because I've actually had this issue in the past. So if you're on the fence about therapy, don't wait. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/InvisibleChoir today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/InvisibleChoir. This episode is also proudly sponsored by Factor. Everyone, if you're looking for an incredibly convenient and stress-free way to eat this spring, consider Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted and dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. They've also got a pretty incredible weekly menu with 35 options, including popular offerings like keto, protein plus, or vegan and veggie. They've also got an extensive array of additional add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunches, snacks, and even beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. And look, these are no-fuss, no-mess meals, because Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. And if you're about the quality gourmet meals, then you can try their premium feature ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And look, let's face it, if you're a parent like I am, mom and dad don't always have time to fix a premium quality meal. That's why Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. To give Factor a try, head to factormeals.com/choir50 and use code choir50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code choir50 at factormeals.com/choir50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. When it was time to leave, Corey loaded up his drum set into his Hyundai and headed southbound on I-95. But he noticed something was wrong with the SUV, so he exited onto the PGA Boulevard off-ramp. Once pulled over on the shoulder of the off-ramp, the Hyundai was parked near the grass off the northern side of the road. The grassy area was bordered by shrubbery and some trees shrouding the DoubleTree Hotel parking lot, which was within shouting distance from Corey's vehicle. At about 1:30 a.m., Corey called Matthew Giles Huntsberger, who had been filling in that night as the bass player of Future Presidents. By that time, Huntsberger was already at home and in bed. He lived about 15 minutes away from Jupiter and told Corey he'd go to his location to try to troubleshoot the vehicle issues. Corey also called the Florida Highway Patrol at 1:44 a.m. for help, and a road ranger drove to the off-ramp. When Matthew arrived, the pair thought the car might need more oil, so he drove to a nearby Shell gas station. After purchasing the oil, he headed to the DoubleTree Hotel parking lot so that he could get to Corey's car more easily. By then, the road ranger from the Florida Department of Transportation had also arrived.
So you saw Corey Jones's interaction with the road ranger?
Yeah, I was on the other side of the fence by the... Because once you go to the store, you can't get back to where he's at. So I had to just park over by the hotel at that point. So, yeah, I heard him talking to him roughly. It was like maybe 40 feet away or something like that. So
you could hear Corey Jones speaking with the road ranger about the car?
Yeah, they basically, he pretty much needed a tow. And the road ranger said he's not able to help him towing. And they were looking around to see if there's anything they could fix. And determined that he needed a tow at that point because there was really nothing else we could do.
At 2:41 a.m., the road ranger left, and Corey told Matthew he didn't need to stick around and that he didn't want to ride with him because he wanted to stay with his drum kit. He said he didn't want it to be stolen. Matthew then left the scene at about 2:45 a.m. Corey also made many calls to the AT&T roadside service. The first call was at 2:09 a.m., however, nobody answered. He called three more times and still no answer. At 2:45, he called again, and it was recorded. He waited on the line for about 26 minutes. While waiting, he made a two-way call to his brother CJ at 2:52 a.m.
He didn't know what the problem was.
And did you offer assistance to him, sir?
Yeah, I offered assistance to come get him. He said he couldn't leave the drums.
Just pause there. Next question.
And were you aware that he had been having some problems with his SUV prior to that, sir?
Me personally, I think it was his gas. I don't know anything about his oil, but I know his gas meter level was playing around with him.
And to your knowledge, I know you said you offered to pick him up. Just yes or no, were you aware that he had a place to play his drums at that Sunday morning?
Yeah, he was going to play.
Okay. And did you offer to provide him with a tow truck?
Yeah, I gave him the number to a Palm Beach Towing, but he was pretty much on the phone already.
Okay. And was he on the phone with a different service to get a tow truck, do you know?
Yes.
Finally, at around 3:12 a.m., someone answered at the AT&T Roadside Service call center. The call started out like most of this kind do. The operator asked Corey some general questions, and he began to answer them. Also, as nearly every call center does, AT&T was recording that phone call, and it's a good thing they were. On Saturday evening, another man prepared for his long night. Yet, unlike Corey's fun plans to jam with his band, this man started his work shift as a Palm Beach Gardens police officer. The 38-year-old was a man named Newman Raja. About a half hour after Corey Jones woke up from his nap at his brother's house, Officer Raja started out his night in a patrol car. Yet later on that evening, his assignment changed to what is called a plainclothes assignment. At the time he switched from a police patrol car and all of its police insignia, to a white Ford cargo van without any markings. Additionally, Officer Raja changed into jeans and a tan t-shirt. He also put on a red baseball cap with stitching that spelled out CAT, which was representative of Caterpillar Incorporated, a construction equipment company. Officer Raja's plainclothes investigation involved stolen cars in Palm Beach Gardens. Officer Raja was new at his position and was still on probationary status within the department since he'd only been hired there less than 3 months before. Before he drove off, his supervisor told him to put on a tactical vest with the police markings on it and also told him to identify himself as a police officer while conducting his work for safety reasons. That night, he'd spent time driving around hotel parking lots surveilling activities. But when a radio call went out, Officer Raja headed to a nightclub to respond. At approximately 3 a.m., he was driving on Interstate 95 when he spotted Corey's broken-down Hyundai.
Do you recognize that van, sir?
I do.
And is that the same van that you're talking about that would be utilized in this plainclothes burglary detail in October of 2015?
Yes, sir.
And looking at this white van, is it intentionally not have any insignia whatsoever of being a law enforcement vehicle?
If you could just rephrase that, I'm sorry.
Does it have any indication whatsoever it's a law enforcement vehicle?
No, sir.
Is that intentional?
To be honest with you, I don't know anything about the fleet, so I couldn't really answer that, how intentional that was.
Is it necessary not to be identifiable as a law enforcement vehicle in order to accomplish the goals of this plainclothes detail?
Yes.
So there's no police lights on it?
Correct.
No big badge that says Palm Beach Gardens Police Department?
Correct.
No antenna sticking out of multiple places on it?
Correct.
And did the defendant take part specifically in this detail?
Yes.
Officer Raja had worked about 7.5 years in law enforcement. He was also certified as an emergency vehicle operations instructor and as a firearms instructor. He also had about 800 hours of teaching under his belt at the College Criminal Justice Institute. Needless to say, he was well-versed in the direction and tactful process of approaching a car when making a traffic stop. When he saw Corey's SUV stalled out on the off-ramp, he believed it was an abandoned vehicle left on the side of the road, so he called over the radio to note he was approaching the vehicle and drove the wrong way northbound up the off-ramp where Corey, his expensive drum kit, and his SUV sat. Corey was still on that phone call with the AT&T roadside service officer at the time. He also had his legally owned firearm he'd recently purchased inside of that vehicle as well. Officer Raja pulled in a perpendicular manner a couple of feet in front of the Hyundai, which in itself was against police protocol. The parked vehicle obscured a part of the roadway, and if Corey's Hyundai had been in driving condition, he would not have been able to drive forward using the road since the van now blocked the roadway. He would have had to drive off the shoulder of the road to go the correct way southbound on the ramp, or he would have needed to back up and do a U-turn or a three-point turn to drive away from the officer's vehicle, therefore heading the wrong way down the off-ramp. Officer Raja did not put on his police-issued tactical vest, nor did he place a police badge around his neck as advised. The radio remained inside the car as well, and at the time he looked like an everyday civilian wearing casual clothing and a construction equipment hat who had recklessly driven up an off-ramp the wrong way. While Corey Jones continued answering preliminary questions that were recorded on the AT&T call, there were no out-of-the-ordinary sounds in the background. At least, not yet.
Thank you for calling AT&T Roadside Assistance. This is Maddie. May I have your mobile number to better assist you? Okay, give me one moment to pull up the account. And what's the name on it?
Corey Jones.
Okay.
Beach Housing.
Yeah, I see Delray Beach House.
Yeah.
Alrighty. And what can I do for you tonight?
I need to get a tow. I'm broke down.
And is this mobile number with the vehicle?
Yes.
Okay. What's wrong with the vehicle?
It won't start.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Liquid IV. Summer is almost upon us, or as I like to call it, music festival season. And hey, there's nothing more that I love than putting on a freshly starched 10-gallon cowboy hat to go sit in a dirt field and listen to some great country music. But hey, that's how we do it in Wisconsin. And you know, summer music festivals require extraordinary hydration. That's why I always pack a couple Liquid IVs in my boots. Liquid IV hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients, all in a single stick, it's clear why Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. All you do is tear, pour, and live more. Seriously, one stick in a 16-ounce glass of water hydrates better than water alone. And I really like all of their flavors, but I really love the sugar-free options, especially the white peach and the raspberry melon, both of which contain a proprietary amino acid allulose blend, which is Liquid IV's innovative hydration solution with zero sugar and zero artificial sweeteners. So before you hit the festival circuit this summer, turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code INVISIBLE at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code INVISIBLE at liquidiv.com. Hey, shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Yeah, this is me about 80% of the year. I have terrible sinus issues and horrible seasonal allergies. And like anybody, when I can't breathe, I can't work, I can't play, I can't even sleep. And as you can probably imagine, congested sinuses all the time make it really difficult to produce and record a podcast. And you know, after trying just about every product on the market, I found one that actually works really quickly and really well. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. In fact, it's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. If you're like me, for some reason, some don't work at all. And that's the reason I actually really love Astapro, because it works. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. And Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. So it hits just about all my symptoms. If this sounds at all like you, don't suffer in silence any longer. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. That's Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Before becoming a police officer, Newman Raja dabbled in multiple jobs. Once he graduated high school, he went on to John Jay College of Criminal Justice from 1999 to 2003, only he didn't finish his degree. He worked as a security systems installer and also for a motorcycle shop. At some point, he opened 2 small businesses where he encountered financial issues, and the IRS requested $10,000 in back taxes. Foreclosure also loomed on a condo he had recently purchased. Yet his last day of employment prior to becoming a police officer was at a Jiffy Loop. In 2007, he stopped working there in order to focus on studying. He began attending classes at the Palm Beach Community College Police Academy. In 2008, Newman Raja was hired soon after graduating from the academy. He started his first job as a police officer at the Atlantis Police Department, which was a smaller department located in southern Florida, with a population a little less than 2,000. He worked there for around 7 years, and by 2010, he was able to purchase a 2,600-square-foot home for himself and his family. He was also promoted to sergeant because his annual performance reviews were solid, yet he was also known to occasionally go against police policies.
Norman Raja worked at the Atlanta's police department for 6 years. We've gotten our hands on 16 different complaints of excessive force made against him. Still, the Atlanta's police chief says Raja was a good officer.
The use of force report rarely involves just him. There's generally 2 to 3 officers involved in that report. So it's not just Raja exclusively.
Many of the complaints involve the use of a taser, armbar, or even punching 2 aggressive women in the face that were Baker-acted at JFK. Chief Mangold says in every case, the use of force was founded.
Frankly, everybody has their own opinion. I'll be happy to provide use of force reports to you, and beyond that, I don't have any comment.
There were also 3 disciplinary reports in his file for repeatedly mishandling evidence and paperwork and not following policy during a vehicle pursuit, yet Raja left Atlantis with a mark of approval.
It was my understanding he wanted to go to a larger department. He had reached the top that he could possibly reach here.
We're also learning Raja did have a disorderly conduct charge as a juvenile for a prank he did while in high school. We also learned that he had actually applied to 4 other agencies before starting at Atlantis.
While Corey was on the phone with AT&T, not only were his drums inside the car, he also had his gun with him that he'd purchased on October 15th, 2015, just 2 days before his Saturday night gig at the Tiki Bar. Corey's job as a housing inspector for Delray Beach took him to many neighborhoods. Some were good, but some were also a little rough. He also played shows late into the evening and often into the early morning hours, and he thought the gun would offer some good protection. The .380 caliber weapon was legally purchased, and he held a concealed weapons permit that was valid at the time as well. It's not clear if the gun was an ambidextrous model or a model made for a left-handed person. But if you recall, Corey Jones was definitely left-handed. As Corey spoke with Madeline Tolliver, who was the AT&T dispatcher, someone approached his vehicle, and at around the very same time, Corey stopped answering Madeline's questions.
Ms. Tolliver?
Yes.
And we left off with you telling us that you had asked Corey Jones a question and you didn't receive an answer.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now, when you didn't receive the answer to your question, did you then start to hear some other commotion in the background?
Yes. Do you want me to explain what I heard?
Sure.
Okay. After I didn't receive an answer, I heard the pinging of the vehicle as if the door had been opened and the keys had been left in the ignition. And then I heard yelling and then gunshots and then yelling and more gunshots.
For approximately 2 minutes at the beginning of the call, there were no door chimes ringing or anyone yelling. When Officer Raja approached Corey Jones's vehicle, he didn't introduce himself as a police officer, and without his vest on or any attire that presented as a police uniform, the plainclothed stranger's approach might have startled anyone, yet Corey seemed calm. After around 2 minutes of general questions with the roadside service, a dinging sound rings out as Corey has opened his car door after the stranger in the construction hat approaches. The keys are still in the ignition while the door chimes continue. And after about 10 seconds or so, there are voices. Once Officer Raja approaches, he does not identify himself as police, but he does mumble something. Then Corey responds. Within seconds, the interaction escalates. 2 times, Corey tells the officer on the recording that he's, quote, good, yet Officer Raja persists, and then he yells at Corey to put his hands up while his gun is pointed at him. In response, Corey grabs his own firearm, only the safety is still on. The gun's magazine was loaded with 6 rounds, but the chamber of the firearm was empty. Corey then abruptly flees north on foot, heading toward a lone tree. He runs away from his car and runs away from Officer Raja in the unmarked van. While running with his back to Officer Raja, Corey drops his gun near the left side of his Hyundai near its rear tire. He doesn't fire his weapon once before the gun is tossed, but as he runs away from the vehicle, Raja fires 3 rapid shots at Jones. Then 10 seconds pass, and the officer fires another 3 shots. The entirety of those 6 shots fired, from the first through the last, takes merely 13 seconds. After officers on scene locate Corey collapsed alongside the roadway, they secure his body to ensure he isn't in possession of another firearm. And a short while later, he's pronounced dead on scene. The autopsy report revealed that Corey Jones had been shot in the right upper arm and another bullet went through his left forearm. A third bullet brazed his left elbow. But the shot that killed Jones was a bullet that went through the right part of his chest, hitting some of his ribs and fatally damaging his heart and pulmonary artery. Corey's black t-shirt that had his band name scrawled across the front was stained with blood amidst the white lettering that read, "Future." The coroner subsequently ruled the death as a homicide. The autopsy report also diagrammed the trajectory of the bullets and how they entered and exited Corey Jones's body. Notably, the results indicated that the bullets entered Corey from a trajectory toward his back, consistent with wounds of a person who was running away from the gunman. The bullet that blasted into Corey's heart and lungs entered from the front right of Corey's chest. With such damage, a person could move still, but only for a short distance before either fainting or collapsing from such a sudden drop in blood pressure. Therefore, running as much as 123 feet was not a real possibility. Yet, Corey's gun was later found by investigators about 123 feet away from where Corey dropped it. Investigators also measured the closest part of his body to the distance from where the gun was dropped. The autopsy findings differed greatly from what Officer Raja told investigators shortly after the shooting occurred during his walkthrough interview later on that morning.
So what happens when that sudden drop happens?
When you have a sudden drop of blood pressure, you start fainting immediately. You faint, you become dizzy. When you have a sudden drop in blood pressure, you become dizzy, you experience fainting, and you eventually pass out.
Okay. So if a person, Corey Jones, with this injury to his heart, is he going to be able to travel, run 123 feet after sustaining a gunshot wound to his heart that's basically been blown apart?
No.
When Officer Raja approached Corey's Hyundai, not only did he leave his police-issued vest and his badge behind, he also left his police radio inside the van on the floor mat. About 33 seconds after Officer Raja fired the last three shots, he did not use his radio, which was protocol. Instead, since the radio was still in the van, he called 911 with his personal cell phone. There was one more thing the officer did not have with him when he killed Corey Jones. It was his police-issued firearm that he was supposed to have on him in his holster. Instead, he used his backup gun, which was approved by his department, only it was not supposed to be the primary firearm used while he was on duty. That backup gun was the one that killed Corey Jones. The Doubletree Hotel was very near where the shooting took place, and two people who had been staying there heard the sequence of gunshots ring out. Three shots firing, a brief pause, and then three more. One of those people went out onto the hotel room balcony after hearing the shots ring out. The witness saw a man holding a gun walking backwards with a cell phone in his hand. She noted the man seemed to be a good distance away from the Hyundai. She also saw Corey's dead body there in the grass. She said the person with the gun had been aiming in the direction where Corey dropped to the ground. She identified the man as wearing dark pants, a shirt, and a hat, but she couldn't recall any distinct markings that would have identified the man as a police officer. When Officer Raja called 911, it was recorded just like that AT&T service call that was recorded earlier. However, the descriptions the officer relayed after Corey was already dead didn't align with the real-time call recorded by AT&T roadside assistance.
That fucking gun right now!
911.
This is Garden. This is Gardens Alpha 1. I just got one down. I just shot one person. I'm at that off-ramp right behind Doubletree. Black male.
You're behind the Doubletree?
I'm on the off-ramp. 95 southbound off-ramp. Off the Doubletree. I am not covered in anything right now. And, all right. Give me some units. I got one down. I got one man down. Have five rescue standby.
Roger, you all right?
Yeah, man. I'm good. Drop the gun!
On the off-ramp, right?
On the off-ramp. Give me some units. I've lost contact with him. I don't know where he is.
All right. You got it, buddy. Where's your radio? Where's your radio, Raj?
My radio's in the van right now. I don't have it with me. That's why I'm on the phone.
All right. Stay on the phone, buddy. What's the guy look like?
Black male wearing all black dress. Had a silver handgun in his right hand. I came out, I saw him come out with a handgun, I gave him commands, I identified myself, and he turned, pointed the gun at me, started running, I shot him. I've lost contact, 65 to 28 on the SUV.
Go ahead.
It's going to be a Florida 28 of 286 Papa Romeo Hotel, 286 PR8.
Don't know yet. Spike, put that out now. All right, it's a 08 Hyundai Pop 286 Papa Romeo Hotel.
Yes, 286.
All right, it's
Papa
coming
Romeo.
Back. It's coming back on a four-door Hyundai Gray.
Yeah, SUV.
Yeah, it's out of Lake Worth. It's not stolen or anything.
All right, man.
All right, stay on the phone. Where's the van at? Where's your van at? In the Doubletree lot?
No. Right on the offense. You'll see my van right there. I'm walking back to my van. I'm back to my van in the car.
All right.
Hit at least 3 to 4 times.
All units, signal 33.
All right, you got your radio now?
No. Hold on. Not yet.
All right. I got units coming.
The 911 call took place about 33 seconds after the officer fired his last shots. When Raja yelled over the phone for Corey to drop the gun had already been dropped sometime before. In fact, it had been dropped 123 feet away from where Corey now lay in the grass with a gunshot wound through his heart. Corey was not able to point his gun at anything since he was already down and completely incapacitated. Raja also explained that the gun had been pointed at him by a person who held it in his right hand. The 6 shots had already been recorded on that AT&T call. Therefore, there was no way Raja needed to be yelling, "Drop the gun," during the later 911 call. The gun was left in the grass a good distance from Corey's body. Yet in the call, Officer Raja also said that he'd, quote, lost contact with the person he'd shot. Yet Corey was right there in plain sight with multiple bullet wounds there in the grass. The first person to arrive at the scene was a sergeant on duty. He noticed Officer Raja standing by his van and the hood of the Hyundai. Officer Raja recounted that Corey had a silver gun and that he'd told him to drop it. Then he said he saw the victim run north and throw the gun around 20 feet from the back of the vehicle. Other officers arrived soon after, and with the help of flashlights, they found Corey Jones, who was lying face down with his arms beneath the girth of his body at about 3:25 a.m. Corey's body was around 192 feet from the north side of his Hyundai. His head was facing the direction of the Doubletree Hotel. When they rolled Corey over to check if there were any more firearms, Corey was pronounced dead at 3:32 a.m. In order to find Corey's gun, the officers called in for a canine unit. The senior sergeant deferred to what Officer Raja had told him, and therefore believed that gun was somewhere near the vehicle. Only it wasn't. Instead, they found it some 72 feet from the rear of the Hyundai. None of it made any sense, at least not yet. At about 7:50 a.m. Sunday morning, Officer Raja met with investigators to retrace the shooting as he remembered it. His retelling of events differed significantly from the real-time recording captured by AT&T roadside service. In Raja's rendition of events, he claimed that he identified himself to Jones as police, yet the real-time recording did not capture any such disclosure.
If I knew the vehicle was occupied, I would never put myself in a fatal funnel situation like this by pulling in front of it. And I didn't think there was anybody in there. And as I got close to the vehicle and
the door swung open, and this guy jumps out, and I immediately got out of the van, and he's like, I'm okay, man. And at which point I said, hey, man, police, can I help you? And second I said police, he jumped back, and I clearly remember him drawing and going, pointing a gun at me. I saw that silver muzzle, and he had, I can swear on this, he had a Laser Max laser in the guide rod in the gun, and I saw that red light of that Laser Max flashing at me, and I immediately just shouted, drop the gun, and...
Officer Raja, now surrounded by members of the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Department's Incident Command Unit in the light of day, takes a group of investigators over to the front of the white unmarked police van, which still sits parked facing the wrong way on the interstate off-ramp.
I immediately jumped out and I came right here. And at that point, I didn't have what I had on me. The only thing I had on me, because I was in plain, like my gun was still inside, my duty gun, my vest was inside. And the only thing I had was my backup gun, my department approved backup gun in a waistband holster inside with a shirt tucked in like this. And I immediately said, hey man, police, can I help you? And at which point that's when he jumped back and I saw him draw the gun right at me right after I said the word police. And it was just like, fuck. And it was just, I kind of got like caught with my pants down at that point. And it just immediately, it's like, positive. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, your family flashed in front of you, your kids flashed in front of you, and you're just like, fuck! And it's just, and just immediately I drew down. I was like, drop the gun! And he didn't. He was right there. And I remember pulling the trigger, I think, 2 to 3 times, and he started running. And as he was running, I had my cell phone, and I dialed, and I still remember putting my code in, and just like this, I had the gun, and I'm keeping an eye on this guy, and I put my code in, dialed 911, and I called dispatch right away, because my radio was in the van. And the whole time, I'm like giving him commands, I'm yelling, screaming, I'm like, drop the gun! And as he's running, he gets about like right, just a little past where the guardrail starts, and he does this number, and I see his whole body spin, and I saw like a flash, a silver flash, of like a metallic flash come at me, and in my head, I immediately fucking said, aim, and I was like, aim! And I was like, and I just picked that front sight right in the center mass.
During the walkthrough, Officer Raja also told investigators repeatedly that Corey Jones pointed his gun at him and tried to show them how that might have happened during his version of events. But the possibility of Jones aiming at Officer Raja, as he told the story, didn't follow in relation to Corey's gun location or where his body was inevitably found, and how Officer Raja explained his proximity was to Corey during his retelling of events. None of it made any sense, at least according to the evidence.
Just where the ditch is right there in front of it, kind of like he was in that area, and that's when he did the spin. Then I was yelling, I was like, drop the gun. And I saw him go like this. And I remember saying to myself, aim. I still remember, and I was like, aim. And I put that front sight right in the center mass, and I squeezed, I believe 2 rounds.
Okay.
And I saw him drop at which point. And when he dropped and everything, and I started going up, and I couldn't see him. And I was like, I lost sight of him. And they're like, go get your radio. And I started to go, and I was like, just paddling back and everything.
Raja later claimed that he believed Corey Jones had a red laser sight on his handgun, and that it was trained on him at the time of their interaction. Such an event might cause one to react. However, Corey's gun didn't have a red laser, and so Officer Raja's inference that the red light could have been an additional cause for his concern in protecting his own life was simply not accurate. After a thorough investigation, detectives found that there was a 6.3-second time lapse between the time Officer Raja first spoke to Corey Jones and when Corey responded, this evidence coming from a comparison of the real-time recording from AT&T and Officer Raja's story about the events during his 911 call. They found that Officer Raja did not, as he claimed, identify himself repeatedly as police upon their initial interaction. In fact, he never identified himself as a police officer a single time. And the 6 shots had also been recorded on that AT&T phone call, the first 3 of which were fired in rapid succession. After those shots, the latter 3 shots had a longer delay. Since the shots had been recorded, and since Officer Raja said that he was on the call with 911 around the same time the victim was supposedly still active and alive, The 10 or so seconds between the volleys created a timestamp in comparison to that original AT&T call. Officer Raja told investigators that he had been on the 911 call during the shooting. However, analysts found that the actual call Raja made to 911 happened 33 seconds after he fired his last shot. A shot which, again, had been recorded by AT&T. He was lying, and Corey Jones's patience and waiting on hold on that recorded AT&T service line proved it. In November of 2015, Newman Raja was fired from the Palm Beach Gardens Police Force. And on June 1st of 2016, he was charged by the state of Florida for manslaughter by culpable negligence and for attempted first-degree murder with a firearm. During his time awaiting trial, Raja was placed on house arrest after serving some time in jail. He paid a $250,000 bond and was released. The bond agreement stipulated that he wear a GPS tracking device. However, he was allowed to attend church and to drop his children off at school. Additionally, after being fired as a police officer, he was able to work and pay bills, because in addition to being able to leave his home, he gained employment at a business called Tactical Products Group, LLC. Ironically, a business which supplied tactical gear to law enforcement agencies. He fell into debt while awaiting his trial, but his legal team and their services were free of charge because his union paid for the fees through his collective bargaining agreement. After the shooting, Corey Jones's family, co-workers, and friends continued asking questions and were persistent with their presence in the media. Corey's life not only inspired the Florida community broadly, his tragic death also inspired discussions about police brutality and spurred several protests against it.
He respected everyone. Everyone. I can't imagine what could have happened that would cause the police officer to be threatened by Corey. Corey was not a threat to anybody. We need to find out what happened. We want to know what happened to Corey. We've lost a very good, good soul, a wonderful human being. I don't know that anybody can come up with anything bad to say about Corey.
On Saturday, October 31st, 2015, over 1,000 people attended Corey Jones's funeral as the Reverend Al Sharpton provided the eulogy, among others.
And the beauty and majesty of Corey is that blacks and whites and everybody's in here together. Amen. And we're going to leave here together. And we're going to stand together. As we bury Corey, we will not bury justice. Initially, Newman Raja's trial was set to begin in October of 2017, but there were multiple delays. The last delay happened because Raja's legal team filed the appellate court with a 52-page document expressing a need for Raja's immunity under the Stand Your Ground law. In response to that request, a judge found that Officer Raja had his gun drawn upon his initial approach to Corey Jones's vehicle, and that his actions indeed, quote, created circumstances that caused Corey's death. The trial finally began on February 26th, 2019, and after 8 days of the jury hearing testimony from the defense, the prosecutors, and several experts and witnesses, Newman Raja was found guilty of manslaughter. Corey's brother CJ responded to the jury's guilty verdict outside of the courtroom that afternoon.
It was very difficult because, I mean, coming to the case, to the trial, we've seen a lot more information and a lot more photos and stuff that we haven't seen, you know, the state was holding back on, you know, for evidence. To get a lot of that stuff this week, it was definitely overwhelming. And it was good for me to see, to get over. I needed to see my brother there. I needed to see exactly for what he's saying that he did. And I needed to see that for me to have some peace. So I seen that, and I'll be able to grieve over it and get over what I saw.
There was a lot of information that was released in the trial itself that we weren't privy to as well. Your father, there's several times shots of him of the emotion on his face, hard to bear, like he was carrying the entire world on his shoulders. How's he doing and the rest of the family?
You know, at that time, this was real hard for my dad. He had lost his mom a week before, and then he had to come bury his son the week after. So it was a lot playing on him. We never really got to grieve. I mean, we're probably going to get to grieve like Corey just died yesterday, probably today, because it was so much a mixed emotions and so much things that it was happening so fast when that first happened. And today probably will be, you know, throughout the week will probably be a time that we can reflect over, you know what I mean, over this time that we've been waiting for.
While many voices spoke out about race being a central component of the injustice that caused Corey's death by a police officer, Clinton Jones Sr., his father, spoke the following words outside of the courthouse after the guilty verdict was handed over.
Thank God that they listened. Thank God that they was tennis. Thank God that they was focused and they persevered through the process. And this wasn't nothing about race. This was about justice. This was about the truth. And the truth caught up with him.
On April 25th, 2019, the former police officer was sentenced to 25 years in prison for killing Corey Jones. Roger was the first police officer in 30 years to get a prison sentence for an officer-involved line-of-duty shooting in the state of Florida. Yet he and his attorneys appealed his manslaughter conviction and sentence soon after he was sent to prison. They claimed that prior to trial, key facts were mishandled and laws were not applied or interpreted correctly. That appeal was denied on April 28, 2021 by the state of Florida. Newman Raja no longer served and protected in a police uniform. Instead, he was sent to live his days incarcerated while wearing a standard prison-issued uniform under strict supervision. He was sentenced when he was 41 years old, and his release is scheduled for the year 2044. By then, he'll be in his early 60s, and his two young children will be adults.
I've known Corey for about, I guess, 6 years now, so we're really good buddies, played music together for about 3 years. We ended up meeting through a Craigslist ad for some reggae guy in Del Rey that was looking for a bass player and drummer to get some stuff working, and Corey and I instantly kicked it off. So it was like we became like the tight rhythm section buddies, and for the next several years, we kept pulling each other in and out of every project we got in until something stuck. And unfortunately, we'd just gotten in Future Presence for a few months before everything went south. I have so many memories of Corey, but the biggest deal is it was just this contagious laughter, man. The dude was always smiling and laughing. He was just like the epitome of a good time. Like everybody, when we went out, knew Corey. If they didn't know him, they're about to know him because he wanted to talk to everybody and be their best friend. I was actually at work today, man. Like, I've been watching the trial nonstop, you know, online, like, every day at work. I've been cracking it. So, like, today I saw it and it was like a gigantic weight was lifted off my shoulders because, like, I was just so happy that everyone finally has a little bit of closure and some justice is finally being served.
And did you expect any different from the verdict?
No, I didn't. Like, you know, everyone always worries that it's not going to be what you hope it is, but, like, the facts in the case were so solid. There's such a good case against them that I couldn't see how the jury could reach any other verdict. I'm just extremely elated and I'm so happy for the family. That's the best part about it, man. It's like, I know like nothing could ever bring Corey back, but it's nice to see a little bit of ray of sunshine in their day.
After his death, Corey's band, Future Presidents, continued to honor him. Once Newman Raja was sentenced for manslaughter, the band held a tribute show in Corey's honor. One of his bandmates said he hoped to do the work to ensure police officers wear body cameras and that their de-escalation training is prioritized over using force. Corey's brother CJ wasn't his only family member who made it to the NFL. His cousin Anquan Boldin played multiple seasons in the league as well, and shortly after Corey was murdered, Anquan went on to play as a wide receiver for the Detroit Lions. That was around the time when Colin Kaepernick began taking a knee for the national anthem in 2015 as a protest against police brutality. In 2016, Corey's cousin Anquan Boldin, along with Colin Kaepernick and other NFL players, traveled to Capitol Hill to meet with the Speaker of the House and other congressmen to discuss changes in police policy. At that time, Corey's murder had yet to be tried. Anquan also co-founded the Players Coalition in 2017 for the National Football League. The aim was to improve dialogue regarding social justice and racial equality by bringing players, coaches, and owners into a conversation and movement related to social justice and racial equality. Part of that mission was to engage in work related to police and community relations and criminal justice reform. In a 2017 interview at John Lay College about criminal justice and police reform, Anquan Boldin spoke about his cousin Corey Jones and how his life and death inspired his work outside of football.
Over a period of time, seeing what transpired in this country, just didn't sit right with me. A lot of things didn't settle right with me. And then I can remember being in training camp with Buffalo and seeing... Okay. You know, I was in the dorm. We were having a training camp. And just seeing the images go across the screen of what was happening in Charlottesville. And for me, it was like, man, enough is enough. Like, this country is in a horrible place. And I feel like I can be doing a lot more than catching touchdowns or, you know, whatever it is, winning games or whatever. So I just felt led to do something else. Criminal justice reform is something I had already been working on prior to. I had a tragic accident in my life. I lost my cousin at the hands of an officer after he broke down on the side of the road. So I think for me, that kind of, you know, began the cycle of me thinking about things past football.
Corey's short life and his family's grace and presence in the Florida community and beyond promoted a sense of connection and responsibility for those who survived him and for the people who knew the man who drummed in a reggae band and who worked within his community, making sure houses were safe and making sure that his music brought others joy.
Every October 18th from here on out will be Corey's Day in Delray Beach.
Corey Jones was a person who worked in our city. The city embraced who he was and the person that he was and his family. So he really does feel like family to us.
This proclamation and plans to create a statue memorializing Corey are just some of the steps toward change.
On February 21st of 2023, Clinton Jones Sr. won a $2 million lawsuit against the city of Palm Beach Gardens and former police officer Newman Raja. The lawsuit was filed in 2016, and it was finally paid out by insurance. Like the long process in finalizing his lawsuit, the journey in finding the truth of what really happened that night on the side of the road caused much undue stress upon Corey's father. From the day Corey Jones died until the day his father received the settlement from Palm Beach Gardens, a total of 8 years passed by. It took Officer Raja merely 13 seconds to end Corey's life. At the crime scene, someone shot a picture of Corey's drum set. The bass drum had a Future President's promo sticker pasted to its bottom side. There were also two symbols below the band's name. One was of a heart, and the other, perhaps ironically enough, was a peace sign.